As we head into the spring market, we thought it would be helpful to revisit some of the top tips from our 2025 podcasts. So, in this episode, we've pulled together a quick montage of standout advice, practical insights you can put into action as the market picks up. So, if you're planning your next move, here are the highlights. We hope you find this recap useful.
Why then do you think it's important for movers, whether they're buying or selling, to be aware of these industry sort of qualifications and regulations that are happening?
Yeah, it's a really strange, when you sit and think about it, it's strange that our industry is not regulated or licensed. It's an odd one, given the other types of industries involved in transactions of property, i.e. lawyers, banks, building societies, mortgage brokers. These are big deals. Buying a property is one of the biggest decisions of your life. Mm-hmm. And you need, as a consumer, it's only fair and right and proper that you should go through that process, understanding it, it being communicated to you really clearly. It's not something people do very often. You know, if you buy and sell houses 5-6 times, you're not experienced at it. And yet, you need confidence that it's being dealt with properly. If you're not experienced, and there's so much at stake, it's only right that the people helping you and guiding you through that process, whether you're buying or selling, should be regulated, qualified, and up to date. That there's a huge amount of legislation, and it seems ever more that people need, that people within the industry should be up, should be informed of and able to communicate to you as a buyer or a seller.
So you've mentioned buyers and sellers. We've also got renters in there as well. How can they then make sure that they are working with trusted people?
A property mark accredited agent, if you're dealing with one of them, you know they are experienced, they're regulated, they're licensed, they're trustworthy. And they follow a code of conduct, which I think is hugely important. There is a vast amount of legislation nowadays, and ever-increasing amounts of legislation coming down the track that agents need to be informed of, need to be on top of. As a consumer, you can't possibly be expected to understand all of that. But when buying a house or renting a house, you know, this is a seriously important deal. It's an important transaction. It's emotional. It's financial. It's your family's security. I believe it's only right and proper that you should have faith and confidence in the people you're dealing with through that transaction. The lawyers are all tightly regulated. The banks, the building societies, the brokers, they're all tightly regulated. The FCA and things like that. And yet, the estate and letting agents don't seem to be yet. Weirdly, it has been on successive governments' sort of agenda to regulate. It's not happened yet. And I guess that's why I'm a big supporter of property market and all its hands.
Turning to first-time buyers, what do you see their biggest challenges are at the moment? There's always a lot of talk about first-time buyers, and we need first-time buyers and how important they are to the whole market. But I'm feeling particularly for first-time buyers at the moment.
I agree. I've got two young kids, and you start thinking about them going to look to buy. You think, how are they going to do it? It's with the prices going up and the cost of living at the moment, everything is so expensive. And so when your rent is so high, the biggest thing that you're going to struggle with is trying to put money aside for a deposit, being able to have that deposit. With the prices of property going up and the cost of everything else so expensive, getting enough is going to take longer and longer and longer. So getting that deposit is by far the hardest thing for them to do. And then when they've got that, they might have to now consider sort of looking at different areas with the interest rates where they are at the moment.
Just thinking about the difficulties of saving for that deposit and the cost of rent, and that seems just to be on an ever increasing scale. How much of that do you feel is down to landlords exiting the market and then the lack of choice?
it's part of the problem. We don't have enough stock available in the rental market, so if there's a lack of stock, it's pushing up prices. But in recent years, for one reason or another, whether it's the cost of interest rates, whether it's sort of various sort of allowances that have been scrapped over the last few years, and I think potential legislative changes coming down the track, so I think they've got a little bit nervous about it, and some are stepping back. We are still seeing people, and perhaps probably the slightly larger landlords staying around. It's perhaps those ones with one property, maybe two, or some that are redefining their portfolio.
It's also good to see some of the lenders being a bit more creative and innovative over some of the products, because they want to lend money to the first time.
Absolutely, yes. You know, they do take into account various things now with the help from mum and dad, and so that's Bank of Mum and Dad is still a big part of it.
Isn't it about the 10th biggest lender or something like that?
Yeah, it's a huge amount of money, and it makes a big difference to the market. But with Help to Buy and they're possibly going to hear some other things next week in the budget about, other sort of things that they might be doing. Who knows?
Watch this space. And your work is predominantly advising sellers. What should sellers be doing or thinking about now to take advantage of the market?
Well, I think now is a really good time, because what we're seeing is that the evenings are lighter, we're getting closer to the spring. So it's a really good time to start preparing now. One of the biggest things I say to clients is get as much detail up front as possible. I've been travelling the country for the last 12-18 months, and my presentation has been about getting that information and trying to progress the sales process, the buying and selling process. It needs an overhaul, but what you can do immediately is have that information, whether it's paperwork on an extension or installation of a boiler or windows or anything to do with your ownership and what you've done in that time, and all the title deeds, that kind of thing. Get it all together. Get it to your solicitor and make sure your solicitor's instructed right at the beginning. So they've got everything there. You're not waiting then for...
Would you do that actually before going to market?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because you just don't know how quickly you're going to find a buyer. You might find a buyer straight away, in which case, great, you're ready to go.
But let me ask you this, and I ask this with the knowledge that you represent the interests of estate agents. Is it a good time to sell? If someone's watching this saying, shall I put it on the market? Shall I not? Shall I hold off?
I think the one thing I would say is, and I always believe any time is a good time to sell, and the reason for this is, it's never what you buy and sell for, it's the difference between. So if you're selling your property in a good market, you can get a slightly higher price for it, and that's fantastic. But obviously, when you come to buy onto that next level, if your property's gone up 10% and the one you're looking to buy has gone up 10%, the gap actually is wider.
Got it.
And actually, so if you're making an upmarket move, perversely, it can actually be more advantageous to do that at a lower ebb in the market, because the gaps between get closer.
Yeah. So if you're trading up, it's better to do it when the market is coming down.
Absolutely. And also, of course, if you're at the end of stage where maybe you're moving from a larger family house down into a bungalow for your final move or an apartment, then obviously you're going to want to maximise. So you want to try and sell at the top of the market if you're moving down market.
Pricing. So important when the market is in this sort of state of flux, but quite difficult to price accurately. It's not a science, is it?
It isn't a science, but what you do find is it is very easy to see where a market sits in a location once you're monitoring the transactions that happen. And a lot of this is about attitude and people's being realistic in pricing to be in tune with the market. And a big part of this is, if you look at people's focus on a market, it's very often in today's world. We're looking at where are we this month or next month. But when you buy a house, you're looking over a 15, 18 year period traditionally, once you've got ownership of that. So I wouldn't get too worked up about what the price is today, a couple of £1,000 either way. If it's the home you want and it's going to be the home that you live in, then that is more important. And let's take an example. You know, 20 years ago, for example, the average house price was 113,000. And if we were sat there today, we'd be arguing over £250 either way, or £500. That same house now is worth 300,000. So the reality is, over the time spell you're there, the ups and downs of a market become pretty much irrelevant. You're going to see growth over that longer period.
So long as you're not forced to sell at any time.
Unless you're
And I guess that comes into buying the right house to suit your needs in the
right area. It does, yeah. It does. And of course, we all go through, yeah. you know, family issues, and we all go through health issues, and those are the unforeseen circumstances. But by and large, you know, we do see properties continue to track up over the medium to long period. There were short variations.
Yeah.
I wouldn't let this marketplace slow anybody down.
I'm glad you said that, because I often talk about, if you look at the numbers of houses and the numbers of people, it doesn't stack up.
No.
And then we've got immigration, we've got people living longer and leaving home earlier and divorcing more often. It's long-term pressure.
It's absolutely long-term pressure. We do see more and more people, as you say, living together. We see people in longer-term rented accommodation, even into later life. We've got a population that's going to hit 70 million in 2035, and we're not going to build enough houses, even with the new targets, to cope for that. So supply and demand scenarios, if you're on the housing ladder, you're pretty safe, and you're going to see some benefit from that.
Having said all of that, though, Nathan, you know, we are where we are at the moment, and things are sensitive. And if somebody's trying to maximise the value of their house when they come to sell, as they should, what happens if they price it too high?
Well, what we do see statistically is, if a house goes on the market at too much money, you often find it actually ends up selling for less money than it could have done if it had gone on the market at the right price. So, for example, if we just take a property at, say, 200,000, the temptation could be to say, well, I'll put it on the market at 210 or 215 rather than 195.
Yeah.
But then what ends up happening is it doesn't sell at 210, 215, you end up coming down to 205, then you come down to 199, 950, and then you end up selling it at around about 190. And you could repeat that story time and time again. Whereas had it gone on the market at the 195 in the first place, or the 205, it would have sold at that level fairly quickly, and that person would have been gone. They wouldn't have been the further 6 months down the market.
Yeah. I've seen that happen so many times as well, and it's sad because it's unnecessary. I understand why it happens and the thought process to being ambitious with your price, but this isn't the time to do that. I've talked about it being a burnt property. And you price too high and you chase it down, and then everyone's looking at it going, oh, that's been on the market for months. It must be awful.
What's wrong with it? Why hasn't it sold?
Yeah.
So then they go into it with a view to try and knock it down, because there's already been that show of weakness because you've had to readjust the price.
But therein comes good agency and good advice from Property Mark members who will be honest.
Absolutely. And sometimes that honesty isn't what you want to hear. It's like going to the doctor and he says, you know, Phil, you need to do this or you need to do that. You need to lose weight. You need to do some exercise. Whatever that may be. You don't always want to hear it, but they're telling you that for your own good, for you to make an informed decision.
Yeah.
And a good agent will give you the honest advice. They'll give you the information that's going to get you the best price at the end of the journey.
Mm.
So it's not what it goes on for. It's what you finally sell it for.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's the bit that for a consumer, it's difficult to understand that journey, but the agent will be looking at what's my opportunity to get the best price I can do in the current market for my client to help them then achieve what they want to do the other end.
Last year, you told us that if you knew a sale or letting agent was a qualified member of a professional body maintaining high industry standards, you would choose them over an agent who was not. Well, agents who are members of Property Mark are not only regulated, but qualified too. There are currently over 18,000 members right across the UK, all adhering to a strict code of conduct and membership rules. And that is why we at MoveIQ endorse what they do. To find your local agent, look for Property Mark and let them know I sent you. Let's talk a little bit about preparation of going to market, not just the price and choosing the right agent and all of that, but the administrative preparation and getting all that sorted. What do you advise people to do?
So I think that's a very important point. So let's just put a headline stat in for most people that, you know, you average in a situation that one in three transactions that are agreed actually do fall through. That's how it works.
It's a big number.
It's a big number. And the one constant factor in this is time. So the longer it takes from you agreeing a sale to exchanging contracts, the more chance you've got of that sale falling through. And what happens traditionally is houses go on the market. There's a lot of focus on marketing the property and selling it, getting a sale agreed. And then what happens is then there's a big lull while lots of paperwork's collated, put together before any activity even happens on the conveyancing process. And an average transaction can take 20, 26 weeks to exchange. Whereas when a house goes on the market and is coming to the market, if a lot of that administrational work is done then, so, you know, we're looking at the property information forms, we're obtaining all the guarantees that we need for the property, boiler servicing, et cetera, and we prepare all of that ready, what that means is when a sale's agreed, the conveyancers can send out that contract straight away, and you can cut down 3 or 4 weeks off a transaction just by using effectively the dead time while it's on the market till it sells, making sure everything is ready, and a good agent will work through that process with you, so you're able to just hit the blocks running.
It's but it so often doesn't happen, does it? And people sit in their hands and think, I haven't got an offer yet, there's no point doing this. But if you're going to be moving, you're going to be moving.
Absolutely. And of course, think about it. When you get an offer on your own house, what you often do is you run straight out now trying to find somewhere else.
Yeah.
So your focus is on getting details of new properties, going and viewing other properties. You feel safe, you've got a buyer, but of course you've not done the paperwork to send off. So we want to deal with that up front. So when you do get a buyer, you can focus wholly on your new home and not have to worry so much about finding the information and rights of way over your own property, really.
When I'm involved in transactions, I'm a massive believer in momentum. You've got to get momentum at the beginning. Everybody involved, shuffling paper, passing it across. Impossible to inject momentum a month down the track.
It is. You wouldn't walk the first 10 metres of a 100-metre race. You'd come out the blocks and go for it. And that is all what we find happens. You've got to drive out from day one to get over the finishing line.
What was the asking price based on?
Love this. This is my top question.
Is it?
It is, And I mean, with all of these questions, like you said earlier, you are relying on the agent or the seller to actually tell you the truth. And you need to go away. I'm not saying, you know, you take everything that they're saying as the absolute truth. I always think, you know, go in, err on the side of caution, take everything that people say with a little pinch of salt, do your own research, do your own due diligence. Nowadays, you can find comparables very easily by using tools online. You can use MoveIQ to give you the examples of properties that are nearby. You can look at all the information about a property. It's super useful.
Yes.
There's so many different tools that are out there. Comparables is what I would be asking for from an agent. Why have you priced something at this price point? And they hopefully will have done their research and can come back and say, well, actually, on this same street, a similar property of the same spec, of the same size, sold for this price.
Love this. Absolutely love this. Question number 4. Has it been relisted or had price reductions? This is, for me, I remember when I was buying my house, it was really an important thing for me. If I was scrolling through Rightmove or wherever I was looking, if I suddenly saw that there was a reduced price, you're like, why? Why is that? What's the situation here? Is that because they're desperate to move? If they're desperate to move, that could work in my favour.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah, that's so true. You see a price come down and you automatically think, okay, they want to hurry up with this. Remember also, the majority of people that are selling a property are in a chain. They will be buying something else. So maybe, unfortunately, the only way that you can hurry up a sale sometimes is to reduce the price if you're already committed to something else and you really want that property.
Yes. Yeah, important stuff.
Toby, if it's okay with you, we always like to try and address comments that our audience have made to some of our previous housing market updates. Can I pose a couple of them?
Certainly.
Somebody said, for me, looking to downsize and move out of my current area makes this process much harder. Eco housing would cost at least 25% of the value of the property to retrofit it. How would this be possible to do with people on a fixed pension? Pretty tough situation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's one thing that we need more detail on from the government, from their sort of point of view of what they want to do with potential grants and sort of driving the eco side of it forward. Because it can be expensive and not everyone has got that available cash to put into the property. Downsizing as well, it's a big decision. We touched on a second ago about these sort of pinch points in life where you're sort of making a decision, a definitive moment. And downsizing is a big one. And so to sort of add that with the stamp duty and then a potential costs of sort of investing in that, we need more clarity on ideas and more options for certainly support from the government and the wider industry as well.
That's our quick recap of the top tips from 2025. Thanks for listening, and if you found it useful, please follow the podcast and share it with someone who might like it too.